Wednesday. It's Thursday, the 29th of April. Kirsty Neat talking with Lola Kinfig Balasala. Right, everything's working, so we can just chat away. I wanted to ask you really about your memories of living up at Gary Holland and your memories of people coming to talk with your mum and dad about the Manx
language. I'll come and sit beside you there. I think that would be better.
That'd be better. Okay.
Right. Well, there's your
that's all right. I'll move that over here. There we go.
Well, you said this. One of them
doesn't matter.
I could put this on the floor.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Can't wait up.
Have you got another table? Perfect.
Everything's ordered.
Oh, that's brilliant. Great. Okay, so you can sit there.
Oh, dear.
Right.
I'm exhausted with it all.
So can you hear me now?
Yes.
If I talk like this, you can hear
me.
Okay. I wanted to ask really about your memories of living up at Gary Holland and your memories of your mum and dad and people coming to see them to talk about the Manx language. But before we start with that, perhaps you could tell me when you were born and where you went to school and how many brothers and sisters you had.
I had a young one here last Saturday and she's just asking about, she's doing a millennium project for her school.
Oh, right.
About me going to school and all this business.
Brilliant. So you had to tell her all that as well then.
I had to go and tell her that. Drink your tea.
I will. Lovely cup of tea. Let's try some of this Bonnag.
Is it bitter? Those candlesticks belong to mother's people, the Kellys. They must be 300 or 400 years old. And the dogs.
Those Stafford, is it Staffordshire? There's that kind of pottery.
I don't think there's anything name on them.
On the
I
bottom.
Don't think so, no. They were all sitting on the mantelpiece. And those plates, they're all ancient too, they
right.
all must be.
Did you have a dresser up at the cottage?
Yes, we had a dresser. When I was little, we had a dresser, a big dresser in the kitchen, and all the plates and the cups all on it then. And then underneath there was cupboards and kept cooking the crocks and things like that. And we only had, first, that was it, we only had a pantry where everything was kept. And then Father built this a piece for the back kitchen at the back. And the churn, and I think there's a little churn down the museum belonging to us. And Walter took one time. He used to go around the hedges scraping.
That was Walter Clark, was it?
Hmm?
Walter Clark, did
yes.
he? Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
So where did you go to school? Where?
Arbury School.
Arbury.
We 2.5 miles to walk down. And it used to, and you had to leave at 8 o'clock in the morning, and then we didn't get back till nearly 5, because we'd only live. Didn't go to school till we were 7.
Mm.
No. Doris went with me. Mara, this is the one that's up there. We all went to school. And who was the T.C. Corris was the first master. Got pictures of the school there, and went there till you're 14, and then you left school. But I was always home, because my older sisters who had been home left then, you see, and couldn't marry, and went to work, and then I was the next to hold the fort. And Mara, this is my sister up in the nursing home, she had a TB hip, and she was very, very ill for many years, and she she's still got a leg, a stiff leg, and it was nearly 4 years walking with a steel on her leg and crutches and everything, and eventually she got well enough to walk without the steel and all, and she could walk and all. Mm. She walked to Bollebeg and everything after that, learned her trade as a dressmaker. And
can you remember what you did before you went to school? You said you didn't go to school until you were seven. You didn't start school until you were seven. So what did you do until you were seven? Did you just play?
Played round, and then I had an older nephew, a niece, my oldest brother. He was 20 years older than me.
Right.
And he married, and his oldest son and daughter, Roland was was 6 months older than me, and Margie was only like the year younger. And they came up for all the summer holidays, you see, and we'd be going out playing what we used to call in those days chaney houses.
What's that? What's that? Not heard.
Used to go down the field, and you'd be making homes, houses, you see. They'd be laying them out, the stones in the field like that, and the bedroom and the kitchen, and we'd be having little tins and little pots and things, yes, down the field. That's what we used to play with. And then we were allowed to go out, the Ronnig River was further out the road. Of course, nobody worried about anything those days, and we'd go out there and play in the river. Playing the river. And then little neighbour girls, Nancy Quayle and all, you'd meet in the river and playing like that. Mother never allowed us go like down Bollebeg or anywhere
like
that.
Not too far away.
Just round about and to the river. And the roads was only, what do you call them, mud roads, soil roads. Mm. Back then they were never done up. And they were.
So how many brothers and sisters did you have altogether?
I nearly forgot.
You had so many.
Well, I had two brothers and seven sisters. Seven. That's seven, eight, nine, ten.
And you were the youngest,
yes,
weren't you?
Yes.
That's right. And so when you were young, some of them had already left home, had they? Had your oldest brother left the home? Had he gone out to work when you were sort of born?
I don't remember him home, you see.
Right, I see.
I don't remember home. I don't remember my older sister home. She was Nellie. She was Mrs. Kermode, and went to on a farm, Bollacottia, Cacken's Bollacottia. And she married a man up there. And my other sister, I don't remember any of them home when I was home. It's little, they were all gone out, and then they got married. She married a Pemberton from Bolly else, went to farm. My other sister, Gertie, she was home more than anything, because she was a tailoress, but she came home to sleep more till she married later in the years, Jack Corn. And then I had another sister who went to, I was only 12, and she went to Australia to get married. In fact, her husband-to-be had gone a year earlier, and then she went out, and that was 1926.
Was he farming over there, or what was he doing in Australia? Was he a farmer in Australia?
No. Yeah, well, to a certain extent, yes. He went on a farm.
Right.
But he was on the railway and all the way over here,
right.
And they thought he'd get a job on the railway in Melbourne, but because they had cousins there. But when he got there, the railway was on strike, so they persuaded him that the best thing to do was to go out in the country if he wanted to save money to bring his wife out. So that's what he did. He went on the farms, and that's where he went on the farm.
So he paid for her to come over?
Out, yes.
Right. And she went by boat, presumably?
Oh, yes. Took 6 weeks.
Wow.
To go. And they were married. I've got the pictures there. They were married in the cathedral in Melbourne. And a girls friendly or something like that from Douglas. I've forgotten, you see.
Yeah.
was something to do with Blanche going away, helping her.
Helped
you
her
see.
Out, right.
And when she got married, they seemed in contact to the Melbourne part of it as well. And when she got married, they sent a letter to Mother. I've got the letter yet, saying that they'd seen her daughter married and in the Melbourne Cathedral, and they had a small reception in the hall with her near friends that she'd met on the boat and her husband. Yeah, a lovely mother was awful pleased with that letter. And then we got a photograph of her and married, and yes.
So did she write regularly back?
Yes,
back
she didn't come home for 55 years.
Wow.
Because her family was grown up, and then she was always said, oh, well, when so-and-so goes to school or goes to work, I'll come home. But she didn't at all. And she came about 16 years ago. She was home here. They're all photographs of her.
Gosh. So did your mum and dad, did they talk to each other in Manx?
No, not really. Why? They never spoke to us children, to the family. Not in the house, unless between themselves, unless there's something we weren't supposed to hear.
Yeah.
They would maybe say it, but not very often. But sometimes there would Manx people come in,
right,
and they would speak Manx then.
Right.
But I used to, Tom Braid and Mark and them always used to say, you're a disappointment to us, because I said, I don't know where you're making love to me, or what are you doing when you're talking this Manx, you see? And he said, well, why don't you learn? And Tom always went, when he went on holidays, he always sent a postcard home, wherever Tom went, sent a postcard, and then he'd write on the bottom of it, go and find out what that means. And he'd write it in Manx.
So it just wasn't something.
No, they never spoke it much then. Till the later years, when these students all wanted to learn, they started to come. And Mother would talk, they would all talk. I could follow a lot of what they said, you know, always. But and Dennis's little boy, Dennis learned Manx, this nephew with Mother, to a certain extent, and then when he grew up it was forgot. And then some late years ago there, he thought he decided he'd learn it again, so he went to some lessons and all, and he learned quite a lot of Manx then. And his little boy, he was teaching him to count in Manx and say different words in Manx. And Adam was saying he could talk in Manx better than he could in English when he was two.
Brilliant.
And he always, when he comes through past the ferry bridge, little Adam, he's only five, never forgets to say Malgamai and the ferries. So,
Your father was called John, wasn't he? Was it John Kinvig, that was his name?
He came from the Gerry Moor.
Right.
And they were a big family, and father was the oldest of them. And he came over to live in Mother's, and he was a mason by trade. And he learnt his trade with Tom Kegg. He was a mason that took people on, and he learnt his trade with Tom Kegg, and they built the Running Chapel. And father earned his first money there, because it'd be years, you see, they wouldn't have been paid. And the first wages was £1. And he said that when he this pound was given to him for his wages, he said he was walking in air going home to his mother to give this whole pound to his mother. And that was his first wages.
That was his first wage back.
And that would be, oh well, I can't. And they built that, and then there's my mother's aunt, it was, she lived, was a housekeeper for some old gentleman down here, and he died and he left her £100. And she built a cottage up opposite the Running Chapel for that £100. And it's still there. Well, the gable of it and all is there. And it's lovely stone, and it's just the same stone as Ronnie Chapel was built in from Airy Stane Mountain.
Right.
A lovely stone, and I've got a picture of it there somewhere. But she never lived in it very much. She was a maiden lady, and her brothers all lived in Glenrushen, and none of them married either. And she was a sister to my grandmother, and she decided that she'd go back to Glenrushen to look after her brothers in Glenrushen. And so she left that cottage, and there was an oven and boiler in it. And Father had to take the oven and boiler out and bring it back to Glenrushen for her. So then Mother, we used to look after it, and we used to, as far as I can remember Mother talking about it, was that she used to be beggars going round travelling at that time, and she on different people. And they used to let it for a shilling a week to them.
Right.
Just for a night to
stay.
So
they had somewhere to stay. Yeah.
Yes.
Right, that's interesting.
So, but in my time, when I grew up, I don't remember anybody in
no.
it or anything.
No.
And Father was times going to talking about going to put a roof on it and all this. You know. Well, he never had enough money, I don't think.
No, that's right. Do you know where your mother and father met? Do you know how they met?
They married in Aubrey Church.
Right.
And when they married, Archdeacon Curley married them. Well, he wasn't Archdeacon then, he was vicar in Aubrey Church. But Archdeacon Curley went to school in Ronnig first. There was a schoolhouse down below the Ronnig Chapel, because the old schoolhouse. And Father and Dr. Clegg and I all went to school there first, till they went to Bollebeg, to Aubrey School, till it was built. And they went there, and when Father got married, Mother and Father got married, eventually Arthur Cooley, he was a vicar there. When they signed the register, Mr. Cooley said, "Who's the best writer now, John?" Because Father was a very good writer. And when he was going to school, his writing used to be getting taken out to show to the rest of the school for an example. And it couldn't have agreed with Mr. Cooley. And he said to Father, "Who's the best writer now, John?" when they signed the register. And Father said, "Well, you must forget," he said, "the wear and tear of my hands to yours."
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Father was a wonderful writer, and he was. None of his family could write like him. This is an old ledger that Father used to keep, because he used to work. He was going out to do works. He didn't have and to farms for John Donald Clucas, and he'd be looking after his farms to fix the hedges and the house out buildings, and he was a mason in his own right, you see, and he'd be doing that. And then he kept this ledger. Well, I had another ledger, but my other brother took it. I never got it back. I'm filling it in. So this is only part of it, because
right.
I think it just got torn out. Oh, where is it? No, that's me.
That's you.
Yeah. There, you see this. 1936. 1935.
So this is a sort of record of all the work that he'd done, is that, did he
It's
write?
where he worked,
yeah.
At least definitely, the Ballachillia. That is the Jenny Clucas. So you see there, was just, you see.
Right, so it's rebuilding pigsties, saying to material, setting wash boiler. And how many, it's got how many days, the date he was working,
yes,
and how many days it took.
Yes, I never went to school from the time he was 12. See, it's Ballyack, that is Airy Stane, the J.D. Clucas. the Common Lands Board. He'd done everything for, he was a Southern Inspector for the Common Lands Board then. And he was that, doing all that.
Looking at checking the fencing and repairing fences.
Airy Dam. He set all those trees out at Airy Dam. Yes. And making survey the shoulder road, the park. Repairing fences for the water trough. Building new dipper. This was... I played dippers and this April. He was in everything. He was in the Albany Parish Commissioners then. He was, my memory's gone. He went to different houses for the Albany Parish Commissioners to if any deceased came on, he went to clean them for a funeral.
To let
he
lay them out?
What was he? Oh, I can't think. But he did, that was the Albany Parish Commissioners. Sanitary inspector.
Right, okay.
Yes, that's a, it's a good job he's got a daughter.
Disinfecting the late Mrs.
Quayle's house, Clough Fen. And he was different places. I remember him, and he had the lamp, the put tablets in the top of, some of my brothers or somebody had taken those things, you see, I didn't, with them all older, but I remember it used to be kept, we weren't allowed to touch it, a lamp like that, and he put the lozenges in the top, and then there was a, like with methylated spirits, and assumed and fumigated the...
I see, like a disinfectant kind of...
Yes, yes, there was diphtheria.
Oh, right. It's all right, I'll just move it out of the way.
Or anything like that. Yeah. And he was a church warden.
Oh, where did you get the title?
He was... his name is an Albury Church parish on a tablet. He was a church warden when... The new tower was built on Albury Church, and his name is on the placard in Albury Church in the porch. He's a church warden then. He used to look after the Ronan Chapel before he went down to the church.
On his way.
Yes, because we all went to Ronan Sunday School and the Ronan Chapel, and he would lighten the lamps and everything, oil lamps then, he would lighten the lamps on for Sunday and everything, and then go down to Albury Church to be a church warden.
Brilliant.
And
your mother, Sage Kinvig, she was born at Gary Holland,
yes.
Is that right? And you were telling me before that was it her mother's house, it was left to her mother.
Yes.
Will you tell me
it
that?
Came to her mother from this uncle that lived over in at the Ronan Chapel where this other aunt built a cottage. Well, he lived across, is still there, the ruins. He lived there. Tommy Click, he went by.
Tommy Click.
Click. He went by nickname. Gone. He was Gone, his name was. But I don't know how he got... he always talked about over to Tommy Click's. Well, he hadn't been married and no family or anything, and he left it to mother's mother.
Right.
First.
Right.
He left it to mother's mother. That was it. And then mother was the only child of hers. He was gone, but she was Kelly, a daughter of his sister's. And he left it to her, and then she left it to mother, because she was the only
she was the only child.
Only child of the families. So that's how she came into. I got it. There's a will somewhere. I think there's somebody got that too. I think Mary's got it somewhere. And so that's how it came. And then they came from Glen Rushen, and we... But the brothers lived there, and none of them married. And then when they died, I can remember going out to Glen Rushen. Father looked after it. There was a house and six little fields down below the mines in Glen Rushen. And there's six little fields, and the house is there. I remember going out there with Father and Mother. And... Father, when they couldn't do anything, Ned Kelly, I remember him. He used to set potatoes and all, maybe in ridges then, about all. But Father used to take some of his sheep in the summertime and two or three cattle walk out to Glenrush, and you had to go down through the mountain to it from the Round Table.
Oh, yeah.
And I have been going with him many a time, only watching the driving, no cars on the road then, odd one, an odd one, and we'd be leading them down there for the summer. Well, then when he died, eventually nobody was there to look after him. He died up in Braddon. He's buried up there, I believe, Ned. And then he had two other brothers, George and Harry. Well, they're all in Foxtel Churchyard, as far as I can know. Well, when there was no will left, you see, well, it was Mother kind of claimed it to a certain extent, you see, but it wasn't really hers. So we always kept seeing to it after they all died. It always went by out to Glenrush, and I don't know, you may have heard John Cullum talking about it sometimes. He was telling it on the radio one time about out the promised land. Well, it in late years it always went by the promised land, because it had been promised,
yes.
But that was only really how it came about. It was, used to be, when we were home in our house, all the manservants and the neighbours' men used to all come to our house of a night. It was a really small house, but they'd be sitting round the house on forms and talking to Father, you see. And there was one of the neighbours, Davidson, and Father would be saying about these, maybe some sheep or the cattle that he'd sold and got a good price for them. And Herbert Davidson said one time, he said, and it's, he got them from Glenrush, and he said, it must be like the promised land out there, running with milk and honey, that you get such good prices for the things. And then it catched on as promised land. So that's how that, and John Quillian had it one time, that was always the promised land, but Glenrush really. And well, eventually, and then they had to pay 2 and 6 a year for rent to go into the mountain, mountain rent to the Common Lands Board. That was the Common Lands Board. And then when he got down to Glenrush, you had to cross what we called at that time a Ludden, a valley place. And this uncle, he made a bridge on it to get across it instead of just going through the river. But he had to buy this piece of land from the Common Lands Board, and I've got that ticket yet from John. I got it through John Harrison, John Donald Lucas's office. He paid 2 and 6 for this parcel of land in 1972. Yes, I've got it somewhere there if I can find it. 2 and 6. And then he paid a shilling to come out of the mountain into that. And I used to have to pay it. And then, so my father paid that, you see, after he died. Still paid it. And then when Father died, my brother, who was home at that time, he kept it up, you see. And he always still went out to Glenrush. And he kept it, paying for the gate money to go into the mountain. And this shilling to get across into Glenrush. And he was 2 and 6 for one parcel, and I think 1 and 6 for another parcel of land. And it said parcel of land it was, 1972. And, well, eventually when Dan died, my other brother died, he'd be, what is he, 30 years nearly dead now. Well, I started to pay it, you see, it was automatic. I was paying it, I was left home then, you see, I was still home, and I was paying it. Well, some years back now, I can't remember the date, I've got it all there. The Forestry Board took over from like being Common Lands Board then. It's in Lands and Mines and Forestry Board. Well, my brother Dan, he looked after the lands and mines for the, he was inspector for the lands and mines, looked after the fences for the lands and mines and the quarries and things. He looked after that, he was for them. And so when he died, the lands and mines was taken over eventually by the St. John's ones and somebody else. Well, I think it was all incorporated into the one place after he died. And so Glenrushen, and they started to set trees and clear Glenrushen out there, the mountain. So I got a letter from them one time that they wanted to buy it. And I said, well, I didn't know what to do, really, you see. So anyhow, I got in touch with John Harrison. He used to be in John Donald's Clucas in Douglas. And I said, what did John think? And John said, well, he said, you'll have to go through court or something about that, he said, if you do. So I did eventually. Went through Gough, seen, I had a niece in there too. And we sorted out and found all the relations. We couldn't find back nobody till it came back to us. And when it went, the lawyer said, came to the end of it was, that the family had paid this rent all those years, and I had paid it, that it was mine, really.
Yeah.
And so John Harrison said, well, ask the Forestry Board to see what are they willing to give for it. So they sent in an offer that I went, and because if I wouldn't have accepted it, they would have probably took it over, whether I liked it or not. So John said, well, see what they'll do. So I said, so I accepted it. It's £1,000. Wonderful money then,
yes.
£1,000.
Yes.
So I accepted it, and they bought it, and so that all...
So all those years of paying?
Yes.
The small rent?
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. So that's how we got through that, with paying all those years, and nobody else, between father and brothers, and back to me.
Back to you.
Yes. That it'd been common lands, you see, off the common lands at that time. And... Because the Common Lands Board, Forestry Board, took all that mountain, all Glenrushen in, because I had cousins, mother has cousins, lived in farms down below, Clary Bridge, that was Clark's, you see. Well, that was cousins of mother's, and they lived in a farm down below and all at the Clary Bridge there. So,
back at the house, back at Gary Holland, back at your cottage, what... How many rooms did you have? Can you describe what the house was like inside?
There is only two. Well, I don't remember it because Father had built it. He built the piece to the land, to the house.
The extension,
you see.
Yeah.
A section in my time, you see. But apart from that, there's two attic rooms, you see. There's skylights and windows in the gable for the attic rooms. Only low. And then what we called the parlour end, that was mother's and father's bedroom, you see, next to the kitchen. And then when father built this extension, there was another two bedrooms built to it, you see. So, well, then when the younger families was coming, the older families had left home. So everybody wondered how we all got into there, you see. But that's
there's lots of people passing through.
Yes,
yeah, passing
yes.
Through. Right.
Yes.
And
so,
you were saying before you had a big dresser in the kitchen with all your pots on.
The kitchen was a high ceiling like this all my time. It had been, when mother would be first there and her mother lived there, the kitchen, it was open right to the roof. and what they called the spurs and things, and they'd been papered and all this business. I don't remember it, but he and Mother talk about it. And then when Father came to live, of course, he put a ceiling in it of calico. There's a picture of it somewhere, isn't it? White calico like that, and lats on it. Lats all back and forward on it like that. And that's how I remember it all my lifetime. To late years, there was a new ceiling, a hardboard put on it. Yes.
And what sort of cooking? How did your mother cook? What was there to cook on?
We always had an oven and boiler. In her mother's time, she always had an oven and boiler. And I can remember the first one there, when I was little, it had lovely scrolls on the door and all of the ovens and oven and boiler, and a tap on the brass tap for water.
Hot water.
Yes, and that's where you had warmed it up for the water. And then, of course, it was more or less an open chimney with a slurry on it. And that was hanging there, I can remember, the kettle going hanging on that, and the big three-leg pot. I've got the three-leg pot out there, yeah. And that would be, well, then in later years, Father again, I think it cracked or something, the oven and all, and didn't cook. He put another oven and boiler in, which he got from the next farm. And it was a more modern one kind of thing. Still a boiler tote and a top tote. Well, I think it was open. Yes, it was still open, the chimney. And I suppose one time it would be where but Mother never remembered it like that with a chalk or anything in it. She never remembered anything like that. She always used to say her mother was always more modern in her ways than the rest of them. And then there was only, the windows was only small, first windows, I think. Always a big settle at the back, at the window, big table, and then a form, and chairs, and Father's chair would be always there, and Mother's chair would be there. And Father had a cupboard set in the wall up there, where he kept all his papers
all
and books.
Right.
And nobody was allowed to touch that. Nobody would need a key to it. And these men, they used to come in at night, and they'd be saying, "What's up in that cupboard?" You never see that cupboard open.
Why did they come to your house? Do you know why they chose to come to your house?
Pardon?
Why did all the men come to your house?
Overnight, they'd nowhere else to go. And I don't know, with Father working in different places, I think
he knew lots of people.
Knew better things, people, and knew more things happening. And then Father used to, all the farms had manservants when I was there, and quite, with a family of girls, before I grew up, family of girls, these manservants would be coming round, you see. And they would come in, and Father used to cut their hair and mend their shoes. Dennis has got it, the lass, three-legged lad, he done all our shoes. When we went to school, all the whole family put soles on them, new soles on protectors and tips. And he did the same for the manservants and trimmed their hair. I don't know how they all came to our house. And we'd be frightened going to bed sometimes because they'd be telling stories, all these men.
Trying to scare you. Yeah.
Frightened going to bed.
Did any of them speak Manx when they came round?
No, they were the younger generation.
All
again,
English,
you see.
Yeah.
Yes. And there was Mr. Quayle used to come and he'd be sitting in the chair, or he's sitting in there, chewing tobacco. But he came over every night. And I don't know why. And then the land around about us was part of different fields belonging to different farmers, and then they'd be coming round to see it, and they'd end up in our house, you see what a John, And he went by then John the Contractor.
That's what I've heard that name.
And that was this man that was coming in again. What's the contractor been doing today, you see? See, nobody had any money by John the Contractor. So that's how he was with doing this.
All the different jobs, yeah.
His contract work.
Brilliant.
So Bolivale, there's another place, Lane Pit in Bolivale, 1940.
Gosh.
Yes.
Paid. He got paid
for that. Yes.
Did you have any animals at the house?
Oh, yes, we are.
Well,
father and me brother then, he rented land. Used to rent land, we called it up the Lega, up above Ronald Chapel. And I can remember when I was little, you know, we cutting corn with the binding horses. We too always had horses. And mother used to say he thought more of the horses than he did of her. Oh, father, the horses were seen to before everybody else. And he done all the work when he came home at night. He walked all these places. He never rode a bike. Till late in years, he got a pony and float, and then he had a pony and trap. But all his young days, he walked down to Bolladoon and everywhere. And my sister that lives up there, that's in the nursing home, she's called Mara, and that's how he was working in Bolladoon. And Mara Moore was in Bolladoon, and that's how she got called after her, because he said there was a baby, and he says, can you put my name on it? Yes. And I was christened Lola Marjorie.
Your godmother, no? Sorry.
Lola Waters, godmother.
Godmother.
Yes.
Yeah.
She lived in Parvell. And one of my sisters and her was very friendly going to the church. They went to church, you see, and they were very friendly, and her brothers were very friendly in the church. And these people lived in Parvell. And Gertie must have said one time that there was a new baby in their house, you see. And this Lola Waters, she'd sisters, but they had no children of any sort. And she said, I wonder would your mother let me be a godmother to that baby? She'd have us never a godmother. And Gertie asked mother, and mother said, yes, she didn't mind. And she was my godmother, and I was named after. She said, can you name her after me? But she was Lola Margaret, but mother put Marjorie on me instead. I was Lola Marjorie. And I was all dressed in their family christening robes. And mother said she was frightened nearly touching me. I was so posh. She was the poshest time I'd ever be. And that's how, I've got a photograph of her and all in Parvell. Yes. And that's how the names come on all the family, I think, father.
Yeah,
coming home from somewhere,
picking in a name.
Yes.
Yeah, well, they're lovely names as well. And your mother's name, Sage. Was she named after a grandmother
Somebody's asked me like not long ago, where did mother get her name? Where did Sage come from? Well, I don't know. I never heard of any of the rest of the family.
It's a lovely name. It's unusual, isn't
it?
Yes,
because her mother's name was Jane.
Right.
And the sister Betsy was the builder now, and cousins that I knew her of mother's lot out in Glen May, you know, there was Sarahs and things like that all, but I never heard none of the family Sage, so I never thought of, you know, young, never thought of asking mother, see, how did she get that name? She was Sage Jane. And her mother's name was Jane.
So it's a lovely name.
Yeah, her father only had John on him.
He was just John.
They were called, his father was Dan Convig, the Gerry Moore. And then in those days, It always went by John Dan or Robert Dan or Joe, you see, right. The brothers. But father only had John on him, but he only went by John Dan.
John Dan, yes. Or the contractor.
Yes.
Was
it was always, because there was different convictions. And when mother got married, she learned as a dressmaker, and she walked to Castletown every day. She used to leave home at 8 o'clock, and she'd walk to Castletown, and she'd be crossing the market, and the castle clock striking 9. And she learned her trade in some place there in Castletown on the marketplace. And when she married, she was coming walking one time up the Ronnig Road, and somebody was shouting to her, Mrs. Convig, she heard this name, Mrs. Convig, Mrs. Convig, and she never took any notice because she didn't know she was, she didn't think she was Mrs. Convig. And then she heard him saying, Sage, and she said, I turned round straight away then when I heard that. And
she hadn't thought of herself as being married. Yeah.
Yes, she's only shortly married.
Yeah. How old was she when she was married, do you know?
I think she was 22 and father was 30.
Oh, right, so yes. He was a bit older than
yes.
her.
Right. Yes, and this is mother's and father's golden wedding.
Oh, what's
and
that?
He was bald, he had a bald patch when he got married.
Very handsome, isn't he?
And He all my memory was like that, and he had a ring of black hair, like around the back there, and you know it never faded, it was still black when he died.
Really?
Yes, his beard went a bit grey and yeah. all, but his hair was jet black when he died. Yeah, mother was always grey, she was grey in early years, she said.
All the children, that's
yes,
what it is.
Yes, she was grey. And when I was, this is me again, when I was vaccinated, you had to be vaccinated, and I was brought down to Dr. Freer in Castletown. And mother said she was sitting in, at that time there was trains going, and she was sitting in the waiting room, and she was waiting and waiting. There was no sign of Dr. Freer to come into her. And she said to the maid, will you ask the doctor, see, could he attend to me, because I'll have to get on the train to get home again. And she said, the maid said, oh, yes, I'll go and tell her that you're the baby's grandmother, are you? Oh, that's right. Mother said, oh, no, I'm a mother. And the nurse went rushing off in, she said to the doctor, said, oh, she said, I've told the ass this, I thought it was the grandmother for this baby, and she's her mother. And mother said to her, and she's an aunt before she was born as well. So the nurse, the maid goes into the doctor, Dr. Frey, and said, she tells me she's an aunt before she's born, the Dr. Frey, and then Dr. Frey's wife and all came out to see this special baby. yes.
Brilliant. Did your mother make butter? Did she make butter? Did you make butter?
Oh yes, and I made butter. I made, had prizes for me butter always in the shows and Lake Almacalia. And I loved doing butter. I liked doing butter.
How did you do it? Tell me how you made it. Now I'm asking.
Well, in mother's time, and when I was young, it was you had big dishes of the milk, and the cream settled on. The morning cream was left, the morning milk was left till next day, and the cream would settle, clot on the top of the big ware dishes set on the top. You had what we call binks out in the pantry. And the milk would settle on, cream would settle on it, and you scooped it off. You had the little scoop, I think it was wooden, and you scooped it off into a jug or another dish. And then you put it in the crock, you had the bithig crock. You put the cream all in these crocks, and that was left for nearly a week, and till it got sour and it curdled. And then you put it in the churn, We used to have a big box churn. I remember that, sitting had on a two chairs and turned the handle many a time, this big box churn. And used to churn, and I used to hate it, we'd churn and then churn for nearly a half an hour. And then Mother would, the butter would all come up on the top. And Mother would put it in a big, scoop it again all out and put it in the dish, but in a muslin first, and drain it, you see.
Right.
But the buttermilk off it. And then it was put in there and had what we call butter clappers. I think they're down, no, I think they're up in Craigneish. And patted it all nice and a nice, like all the, and washed it in cold water. You had to wash the butter about three or four times to get the milk out of it. If you left milk in it, it would go acid.
Go off, yeah.
It had to get that it would run clear. Wash it, that would run clear, and you're done with this, turned it over and washed water on. Water out of the well. And then we had a big marble slab. I forget where it was. It's somewhere up at the farm yet, that. And it's in, and Mother, and then you used to put she'd put the butter on there and the scales and weigh pounds or half pounds of butter, clap it all up nice and put a nice print on it. Used to, I think that's up at Craigneish or somewhere too, used to have a butter print with a clover on, used to print, but I never used that, I used the clapper. And make a nice bit like that, and then put a mark on it like that with the clappers.
Did you sell it? Did you?
Oh yes, Mother used to take when I was little, and me nephews and a niece from Douglas and Doris used to. Mother had she had to walk to Colby railway station with the hampers for the Port St Mary during the shopping. Never went to Castletown. It was always Port St Mary and Port Eyre. And went to Port St Mary and sold her butter and eggs. And she used to sell it to Balaquini sometimes. And then I remember a grocery shop at the corner of the prom in Port St Mary, and she'd be getting groceries and all. There was no grocery carts coming around in those days. She'd be getting groceries and all there, and after selling the butter and there was a shoe shop down the street further, and if she had enough money, she went in there and bought us a pair of new shoes, maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. And then when she'd come home on the train, and when we were little, we would have to leave home when we thought she'd be coming off Colby Station. We had to go down to meet her, Colby Glen. And if we didn't get as far as Colby Glen, there was two old gentlemen living in a house up at the top of Colby Glen, the Skillies, George and Harry Skilly. And Mother would go in there and rest. And we'd have to call in there first to see her mother come there. And we would come home to carry, help to bring the groceries. And I can remember going into George and Harry Skilly's, the men with beards on, lived, the two bachelors. And they used to do the roly-poly, current roly-poly, and it'd be cold, and he'd always had to cut a slice of this roly-poly for us kids.
So you liked going to see them?
Yeah, well, that was the normal thing, because it was, Mother, we always roly-polies at home when we came home from school, broth and a roly-poly.
Lovely.
And potatoes, maybe, and they would always say, we had pigs too, and they'd be baked and cured their own bacon. We put in a big barrel, and the herring, Father would be getting him what they call a mace of herring every year, put it in a big wooden barrel, be out in one of the outhouses, and the pig would get killed, and the pork would be sorted down in the tubs. And then when potatoes and herring, I think it was every Saturday we used to have potatoes and herring. Everybody was home, you see.
Yeah.
And bacon then, when the fish would be taken out, it would be cleaned of the salt, and it would be hung up then to dry. And, I couldn't look so that much bacon. Oh, I could smell that bacon yet. It's lovely.
Lovely.
Yes.
Yeah.
I loved it. And so if you everything you had your all your own food more or less, with potatoes and and father and then he'd always Sue had corn and would be cut with a reaper and everything. And one of these times that he had this land up at the lair gave up above the chapel, I've heard the other sisters and telling me they'd a pair of horses in a binder and he was they were cutting it and they were all there, you see, because you had to come behind to pick the sheaves up and do bands, always done bands and put the sheaves in. And I was little, I was only a baby crawling about, it seems, and I crawled underneath the horses. And Fanny, it seems, this big horse, they all shouted to some of her father to stop because the baby had crawled. And that Fanny had put her foot almost on my, they said the mark was for a long time on my chest of that horse, but she'd never put any weight on it. They shouted to Fanny, and Fanny knew, this horse knew, I shouldn't be here, should I?
God. Dangerous stuff, that is.
Yes, it was. Oh, but we were never, Mother didn't like horses, and we were never allowed to go in the stable, I didn't like horses either very much, but we were never allowed to go near the stable with the cattle and the cows, yes, and milk, we had always three cows.
Three cows, right.
And we'd milk them, and I hated it, milked all my life.
Yes. Do you have to do that every day?
You had it twice a day.
Twice a day.
Yes, milk in the morning and milked at night. And when you had the buttermilk, the buttermilk was always kept too. You fed it to the pigs and all those things. And drank buttermilk always. You always had to drink buttermilk with your potatoes and herring.
Yeah. What about wash day? Was there one day of the week?
You only had a tub, a bath. In my time it was an enamel bath, not an enamel bath, a tin bath. But I think Mother, in her time, would be a wooden tub and the board.
Yeah.
Oh, done that many a time. We used to have to bring it in the kitchen and put it on two chairs and scrub away there. Blue, you had the blued in the bucket, and then we all hang, it wasn't on a line, it was all down on the grass bushes.
On the bushes, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, and ironing, and flat iron with a shield on, and a box iron. We had a box iron too. You warmed the heater in the fire and put it in the box iron. That was more modern, I think, even up my time, up to late year, before electric came round, and always had an iron with a shield on. We've got them out the back there somewhere. And it makes you wonder how they were managed, because father always wore, you see, these starched shirts and starched collars. And what did they call it? Used to have instead of the full shirt,
front piece.
I can't think what he used to call it.
No, I know what you mean.
Yes. Yeah. I can remember having mother doing that, because father then went to Douglas every Saturday to this John Donald's office, you see, in Douglas. So he had a chit. He had to have a clean collar and things to go to Douglas.
Did you go to Douglas very much?
Hmm?
Did you go to Douglas?
No. Not till I was going to school, I suppose. I remember going to school, because then at that time, my brother lived in Douglas, you see, and my mother would take us, me and Doris, very often to Douglas, to Fletcher's, and the other sister lived too, so that was the only time we'd be going. In the summer holidays, very likely. I don't remember even going at Christmas time or anything. I don't remember. We didn't in those days have Christmas trees and anything. You hung your stocking up at the fireplace, and father always hung his stocking up, and mother hung hers up, and our stockings were all hanging up. And when we'd come next in the morning down, Father Stratton would be all full of Manx knitted stock, and Mother knitted all her stockings. When we sold the wool, Father sold the wool and put it on the train to St. John's, to the mill.
The mill, right.
And when it was made into wool over there, Mother then went to St. John's, walked to Foxtel, got on the train, went to St. John's and bought all her knitting wool, blankets, flannels for Father's singlets, and a jersey or anything, through for the money that the wool came to.
Right.
So she knitted all his Manx wool socks and everything. So that would be hanging there, and then when we would he would be emptying it. What's this? Will that Father Christmas not come here again? Just look what he's given me, a potato. Then the next thing would come out was something else. Then there was a cinder down the bottom. Father Christmas not coming here anymore. I'm not going to have him. And then we would only have, we'd have a sugar mouse and a sugar pea.
Oh.
That had to be that. And an apple and an orange. And there might have been sometimes a little toy or something like that, just a little thing, but that's it. And Mother would be making toffee. Mother always made toffee, and then there'd be a little, doing a little screw of paper and a toffee down, and you just have this. Hmm? You're often making toffee. Yeah. And that was a great thing in the Manx old days, they'd be making toffee. What day were they making toffee? Was it a special day for it? And there were different ones come around, but Mother used to do it into Manx knobs, stretch it, and they'd be all... I can remember her doing that and then chucking it up into Manx knobs. There's some day that they'd done that with toffee. It was Valentine's Day, I think it was. Bonfire Day. I think that's what it was. Because
yes.
I always done toffee for Bonfire Day for all the kids. Nephews and nieces, and they always had to do bonfires and do toffee. Mary, my niece there, this in Ramsey, she's in, I've always got to do toffee for her every year.
How do you do the toffee then? How do you make that?
Oh, I just chuck some sugar in.
And heat it.
I used to treacle toffee. You put treacle in, and sometimes you put some nuts or something in, but just the ordinary sugary toffee. Yes. Oh, I made some not long ago. And then sometimes you'd go to sugar.
Yeah.
But, I could make toffee for Mary for her birthday. She, that's her niece. She... Michael Brew, she's married to Michael Brew, he used to be harbour master in Ramsey. And then Michael's in Ramsey now, in Douglas. So that's Mary's husband, that's my niece's husband. So then she used, when she first married, and they lived in Peel first, and then they went to Ramsey. Mary, before the children was in, Mary worked in Keith, went to Keith Crew, she wanted somebody in the office. And when Mary went in, he said, do you know anything about farming or anything? Well, Mary said, yes, I do, really, because my dad farmed with my auntie. And my auntie still farms over there. And he said, who's that? And he said, well, my auntie Lola. She said, I said, Auntie Lola? He said, I know Auntie Lola. And Mary was in the office there then, and farmers coming in from the north and different places. I said, tell him. You're new, where did you come from? Mary always said, I came from Ronick. And, you would know Dan then, that was her father. And you'd know Lola. Mary said, how on earth do they all know you out there? I said, it was like a loose woman going round. She said, oh, yes, I know Lola. She was between the farm and then going to marts. I used to go to all the marts and sell things. When Father couldn't do it and my brother would be working, I had to go.
Used to go.
I didn't mind. The mart was down here, in the Bob Payne. I swung the first, that's the first. No, I think it was OP first, the Mardo P, the little Manx Mardo, just where the white stone is, in behind the white stone. I think that's the first place I went to sell something. I'd be only 20 odd or something. And then I found down. Then I sold a cow down there and came home and told Father, and he said, dear, dear me, he said, I'll have to send you again, he said, because that's the price I ever had. He couldn't go at that time, you see, when he was still. So I used to go to St. John's on my own right then, because when Dan married, he lived over the Round Table House, but still found with me when he died. We were half shares, you see, so then I had to take over. But it was just in my name, but it was for Doris, you see.
Right, for the both of you.
Yes, I had to do it for her. But I kept her, you see, done everything for her. So that's the reason why that was sold.
Yes.
To pay for her in the nursing home.
To look after her.
So that's how I had to come down here. So,
Well, I'm exhausted. You must be exhausted.
Yes.
Thanks very much for talking to me. It's been really, really enjoyed talking to you today.
Yes, you could go on and on.
I know.
Ooh, what's that?
It's a bit of